And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. I am back from Toronto this week, as is Trey Graham, so we've got the team back together. This week, we get down to fall television business with our second annual fall television pool, in which we make probably doomed attempts to guess which new shows will find an audience this fall. We'll then move on to a topic destined to make cheerful the grimmest countenance, pop culture breakups. Great breakup scenes, great breakup songs, and maybe even what soothes the dumped heart. And as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I'm a writer and editor with NPR Music and, among people in this room, the reigning champion of the fall television pool.
That's absolutely true. Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I cover movies, pop culture, and theater for NPR.org.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Well, it's awfully good to have all of you around the table again, because frankly, having you thousands of miles away was a little bit disorienting for me.
It wasn't so bad for us.
Yeah. I'm glad to be able to look all of you in the eye. Now, last year at this time, we each chose a show that we thought would perhaps do well in the fall season. I did the worst.
You did really badly.
I did.
We had all the fall television shows to choose from. We each picked one.
Right.
We didn't necessarily have like a point system in place, but it was just which is going to be successful.
Right. Exactly. And just to recap,
picked really poorly.
Exactly.
Right?
I picked the CBS drama A Gifted Man, which no one watched, and even the star of it was glad when it was canceled. Stephen picked Revenge, which was a big success.
Based solely on the ability to say the name of the show as an interjection.
Exactly. Yes. That is exactly true.
No, I had logic behind it. There was like a desperate housewives vacuum. That was my theory.
I know. Trey picked, what'd you pick, Trey?
I picked Pan Am, which only lasted about 10 episodes.
And Glenn picked Terra Nova, as I recall.
Yeah,
which got to the end of its season, but was sucky.
So we all had a little bit of a rough go, with the exception of Stephen, who's been holding it over our heads ever since.
God.
So naturally, as you can imagine, we're going to start the same thing again this year, hoping that we can all be humiliated and become the target of Stephen's mockery once again. But I'm going to make him go first so that he can't sponge off of everyone else's wisdom in making his pick.
All the wisdom of, so I don't choose the next Gifted Man?
Okay.
Settle down, you.
I was really torn in terms of what direction to go. I pored over the fall schedule. I did. You gave me a dubious look just now, but I did. I pored over I thought about, maybe the CW remake of Beauty and the Beast, in which the Beast is a hunk with a small scar on his face to denote beastliness.
He has a little bitty scar.
At first,
how will anyone accept him?
At first, the scar on his face looks like a dangling little
participle.
Of hair, like a little
it's true. And apparently when he gets angry, it has a kind of a Hulk kind of thing going on.
Does he get
veiny
when he's angry?
Where if he gets angry, he gets more beastie looking, but of in an angel vampire kind of way. Like in a kind of bulgy-faced way, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time, he's a hunk.
He's just really pretty. Yeah. Now, as I understand it, he has been the victim of some sort of top-secret military experiment.
I
didn't pick the CW remake of Beauty and the Beast. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I didn't see, for me, a slam dunk. I did not see something where I thought, obviously, this is going to fill some giant vacuum. So I'm just picking a show that looks... I'm just not sure.
Caliendo. Okay. Pick something.
Wait, I'm not doing my Jack Nicholson. Wait. I was trying to do a bad Jack Nicholson impression.
And you did. Go ahead.
Vegas.
Vegas.
Mm. Is my pick. Now, the reason I'm hesitant...
Now, we should say Vegas is a CBS drama.
CBS drama airing Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock Eastern. Dennis Quaid and Michael Chiklis.
Crime procedural.
Right, and kind of a retro. Yeah.
The retro is the worry, just because so many of these kind of retro, other than obviously your Mad Men, but your Pan Am, your Playboy.
Your Pan Am, for instance.
Your Pan Am. Well, like Trey's pick last year.
You good.
I don't know that there's necessarily across America a hunger for a look back at Las Vegas, but it's got a bunch of structural advantages. Mm-hmm. It seems to be very highly regarded. Mm-hmm. It is following 2 hours of NCIS.
Right, absolutely.
Which is a bigger hit than the cultural elite would have you believe. And so it seems to me to have a high... First of all, CBS seems mega behind it. They've been advertising it for months, mm-hmm. which is one reason I actually thought about picking Go On, mm-hmm. the Matthew Perry sitcom, mm-hmm. just because NBC is pouring so many resources mm-hmm. into trying to make it a hit. So anyway, Vegas, CBS, Tuesday nights, 10 o'clock. Watch it just so I can so I can raise the roof once more.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I actually think that there's some wisdom behind that choice.
It's also one of the shows I would most be willing to watch and see if it's any good.
That's one of the ones that I considered picking. Trey Graham.
Yes, ma'am.
What is your pick?
I have several.
Of course you
do.
No, you get one.
You're
you do not
take
get
the Tonya Ballard Brown.
No, Tonya Ballard Brown. Now, okay. For those of you who don't know, Tonya Ballard Brown was a guest panelist the week we did this pool, and she picked all the hits.
Yeah.
But she put her roulette chips down on like
she
three
did.
Different
she
places.
She did.
She covered all. She covered all the sectors. All right. I'm going to give you runners up, and then I'm going to pick one. All right.
We're only counting the one.
That's fair. I have previously spoken of my affection for the Mindy Project in the face of Linda's skepticism. I'm going to double down on that and say I think it's going to get better. I think it's going to find an audience. Mindy Kaling's new show, The Mindy Project.
It's after New Girl, which is a help to it.
Yeah, it's going to help. Also, I am a fan, as you might imagine, of The New Normal. I've seen the two episodes that are available on Hulu, and mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a show that finds an audience with quirk more than anything else, not least because Ellen Barkin is, rip-roaringly hysterical in it and completely inappropriate.
Sure.
Trey, you take away the Little Edie impersonation from that show. You don't got much left. I'm telling you.
I don't know. I'm with it. The revenge entry in my runners up is 666 Park Avenue with Vanessa Williams,
which is following Revenge on mm-hmm. ABC.
Well, natural fit, mm-hmm. Starring Vanessa Williams, who I will watch do anything,
and Terry O'Quinn of Lost, I will also watch do anything.
But the prestige project that I am going to line up behind is Nashville on ABC.
Oh sure,
yeah.
Connie Britton gonna be a winner. Gonna be a great show.
It's a good show.
Britton is I guess you'd say, mid-career country singer. Mm-hmm. She's a big star, but she sings a slightly older school kind of country music, and she's got a crossover country pop kind of rival Hayden Panettiere from Heroes.
Who is definitely not playing Taylor Swift.
No.
Just ask them.
Definitely not.
Just ask them. That's not what's happening at
she's,
all.
Linda is nodding.
as she
just did a visual joke on the podcast. Yeah.
you do a show that's about an older woman and a younger woman competing in the world of Nashville, and you don't call it Drawl About Eve. I think you're leaving money on the table.
Yep, absolutely, because that is certainly the dynamic that's in play.
They're just saving it for all the headlines.
They should actually. Yeah.
There's a lot of talent behind that show. That show.
It's from Callie Khouri.
Callie Khouri.
And T-Bone Burnett is the music director.
Who did Thelma and Louise. Callie Khouri did. So, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And as Trey mentioned, T-Bone Burnett is producing the music, which is a nice advantage. Yeah.
So that's all of my chips right there on Nashville.
Well, we're kind of cornering the market on the new shows that are actually supposed to be good.
Yes.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I'm not.
But I mean, Trey and I have sort of employed the same strategy.
Had
somebody taken Vegas, had I not gotten to go first, Nashville would have been my pick.
Right. Glenn Weldon.
Actually, two of these shows that I'm going to talk about, but then I'm going to walk you through my thought process, like I'm on Millionaire and y'all are Regis. That's the way it's going to work.
That will be helpful.
Oh, please do.
Okay. Two of them are high profile. The first one I'm going to talk about is Last Resort. Now, all these things, these shows I've picked are hour-long dramas, which I think gives it a high degree of difficulty because, back me up here, Linda Holmes, it's harder for an hour-long drama to stick around.
Yes, they'll all fail.
Okay, good. That's supposed
to... Well, but I mean, one of them could be lost.
Sure.
Of course.
So Last Resort is a show about a nuclear submarine that is ordered to attack a different country. It refuses. It questions its orders. It is marked rogue. And then it tries to escape the U.S. government, which is hunting it down, and it declares itself this little island, which is like totally normal island. There's no magic cork that keeps evil in, nothing like that. It's just a regular island that they declare a sovereign nation. It stars Andre Brower. The reason I like this show is that it's created by Sean Ryan of The Shield and of a wonderful but failed series called Terriers, which it's going to be on Thursdays at 8 on ABC, premieres September 27th.
And incidentally, we should mention, in addition to Andre Brower, it also marks the regular TV return of Scott Speedman from Felicity, who was one of the dreamiest boys ever to come to the then WB. And oh boy, everybody's happy to see Scott Speedman. My.
Speaking of dreamy boys, Arrow is a show that theoretically should be near and dear to my heart because it is based on the DC Comics character Green Arrow, except he's not called Green Arrow, he's just called
The Arrow.
Yeah.
Because gritty. So this is a show about a wealthy, very hot, often shirtless playboy who gets marooned on an island, different island, no Cork, and over the course of 5 years becomes an expert marksman because sure. And then he goes back to his city to become a vengeance vigilante filled with rage at who knows what, but he's shirtless and he works
but
out
he
a
shoots
lot.
It, but he shoots it with arrows.
Yes, but here's the thing. In the Entertainment Weekly article about this show, the creators say they want to make him into a kind of a Jason Bourne character. Mm-hmm. Who is big with the fighty fight and the close hand bit and do great, you know, fight scenes. But if you want to do that, don't make your show about a guy who hurls pointed sticks at people from a long way away.
Right.
Don't, I mean, that's not, that totally doesn't make any sense. But it does come from Greg Berlanti, who, despite his provenance with Brothers and Sisters and Dawson's Creek, he recently hasn't been having kind of a mixed go of it.
Political animals.
Well, No Ordinary Family, Eli Stone, Dirty Sexy Money, which lasted two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the deal breaker, ladies. He co-wrote the Green Lantern film.
Of things can go wrong with a movie. Though.
That's true.
It's you can't blame a screenwriter for a movie that big.
Third show that I considered was Revolution because of
It's exactly like Terra Nova.
Because here's the thing. Okay, it comes on after The Voice, so if NBC is going to get a show that does anything well, it's going to be this one. J.J. Abrams is executive producing, although I think we realize that when J.J. Abrams has a big movie he's making, there's more executive than there is producing.
Right,
that certainly was true with Lost. It's by Eric Kripke, who created a show called Supernatural, which I haven't seen, but according to Wikipedia...
I start most of my sentences.
But which many people like.
Many people, and it's been on forever.
Wikipedia, you mean?
The show is highly regarded for correctly citing its supernatural lore.
So which...
Oh, God.
Aw, nerds. I love you.
Yeah.
Highly regarded by whom is
many
he?
Many people love that show, including
absolutely.
Some of my fellow critics love that show.
Here's my problem with it. Revolution is about what happens when all electricity stops functioning, and there are people, who nerds, of course, who are saying, well, how can batteries stop working?
I'm sorry. I've made that point. Are you making fun of me?
I'm just saying,
yes, a little bit.
It's called science fiction, not science boring. So you just give it. It's fiction. Just run
your
with
science
it.
Boring.
Oh, touche. Here's the problem. There is a surly teen. Not one, but two.
Oh, dear.
Which is the problem that Terra Nova had. Mm-hmm. It's the problem that Falling Skies had. When you have a show that's about aliens, dinosaurs, or the apocalypse, what I don't want are scenes...
Or Broadway.
Yeah. But this one also does have Giancarlo Esposito, who maybe he'll hurt the surly teen.
There will still be a scene where somebody says to somebody else, does Bobby seem distant to you? That's not... There's aliens. There's dinosaurs. We don't have time for this. So... that's why I'm going, finally, with Last Resort. Last Resort is my
pick.
I would love to see Last Resort do well. It's a good pilot. It's one of those where it's a little bit tough to see what the long game is.
Right.
Because as a short game, it's really cool.
Yeah.
But you sort of feel like, wow, this is going to be a show for a whole thing. But I would have said the same thing about Lost.
Well, Revolution, you know, has this story bible that they're just going to be doling out the secrets over episodes, weeks, years. Last Resort, I don't care why it happened. I just want to see, you know, some cool stuff.
Oh, right. And it's I think Last Resort is... a much stronger pilot. It's a much more interesting pilot. It's definitely got better acting. Giancarlo Esposito aside, has better acting on the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Andre Brouwer is just kind of one of those guys, you put him in the center of a series you watch him go. And and he's great. And as you said, Sean Ryan, and, you know, it's all good. I would love to see that show do well.
And structurally, it's leading off a night. It's an 8 o'clock show on ABC Thursdays.
Right. On the other hand, Thursday
it's a
is
crowded,
Big Bang Theory
crowded night.
Up against the CBS, some of the CBS stuff, Big Bang and stuff like that. But, yeah, absolutely. I think that one could very easily do well. I looked at almost all the shows that you guys have already picked are on my list of things that I was going to pick. So I'm left with
left with Made in Jersey.
I'm left with my most cynical pick.
Which is what happened to you last year.
Mm-hmm.
You picked the one that you thought was going to be.
How did that go?
Gifted Man.
I would have picked Nashville. I would have picked any one of these other ones. I had them all on my list. You guys took them first because I'm speaking last because I'm self-sacrificing.
For you, okay? She gives and she gives.
Okay. There is a very bad comedy called Partners that is airing between How I Met Your Mother and Two Broke Girls. CBS Monday night. It's a hospitable place for terrible shows at times. And this one is from the guys who made Will and Grace, and it stars Michael Urie and David Krumholtz as the friends, the straight friend and the gay friend.
God,
and
just the sound of your voice, the sort of defeated
I really
nature.
Hate it. Yeah. I really, really hate it. It's aggressively bad. And what
your words are actually dripping, and when the drops hit the floor, they go tss.
What bothers me the most about this show is the talent that's wasted on it, especially Michael Urie.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful example of how someone can play a kind of similar character on two shows with some of the same tics, and yet on one, it's a really interesting, endearing character, as it was when he was on Ugly Betty. But this not entirely different character is suddenly absolutely loathsome. Loathsome. And everyone on the show is dumb, and I hate it. But
that said,
but it's airing between How I Met Your Mother and Two Broke Girls on Monday nights, which I suspect means that it will live. I mean, I think that it will be awful, and I don't necessarily think it will be a giant hit. But even more than my cynical sense last year that CBS could put a, you know, Talking to the Dead show on Friday night and all the Ghost Whisperer people would watch it, this is kind of one of those where you sort of slide it into that slot, and not necessarily people who watch How I Met Your Mother, but certainly people who watch something as lazy as I think Two Broke Girls is. And it's the same night that originally gave us Two and a Half Men and some other stuff. And it's kind of like, meh.
I really want that show to get a creative turnaround, because you talk about talented people. I saw Michael Urie play a Romeo and Juliet in Washington years and years ago before he broke into TV. And he was playing the character who gets stabbed in the sword fight and has the Queen Mab speech. I'm losing it. And he made a huge splash last summer in the Angels in America in New York. And he's a tremendously talented, Juilliard-trained actor.
The problem with hoping for a creative turnaround here is that I have a feeling that the problem is coming directly from the main guys.
The writing team.
From Cohan and Muchnick.
Yeah, our buddy Hank Stuever at the Washington Post in his fall preview said something like, they're writing a show from the 90s.
And that's absolutely true. It's an incredibly dated show.
They're writing
the
gay show from the 90s.
Yes.
And the problem is, he's a central character, but he's basically playing Jack from Will and Grace, who was a sidekick.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but he's much less likable than Jack, to me.
So, Linda, you picked partners in this pool sort of the way that I might pick the Chicago Bears in a football pool, where if I lose and get knocked out of the pool, at least the Bears lost.
Exactly. If I lose, I win anyway. So that's my choice.
So a couple other notable shows, just in case I considered Ben and Kate in part because, Linda, you had spoken highly of it.
It's very charming. It's very charming.
And it looked sort of promising from the ads I've seen. I thought about, as a cynical pick, Chicago Fire. Just because it sort of looks like, you know, drama number 62457.
Yeah, and that one is against Nashville. So only one of those can be.
And that was one reason I didn't. And also, I did want to mention Made in Jersey, just because the commercials all contain the greatest line of exposition I've ever heard in a commercial, where one character says to the main character, "You are a fancy lady lawyer."
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something that will surprise you a little bit. As a show of its kind, as a sort of CBS, very, very lightweight lawyer show, it's not terrible. I didn't think it was terrible.
Are a fancy lady lawyer.
But that's that's played for a certain amount. And I'm not going to remember the name now of the woman who's in that show, but she's British. It's not terrible. It's goofy, but it's one of those kind of amiable CBS kind of very formulaic.
I hope it's the big breakout show.
Do better than you think. The other one that we should mention that I considered picking is Elementary on CBS, which is Thursday nights at 10. And I think it's not an incredibly crowded time slot right now. And I think that when people get a look at it, they might like it as much as we've gone over in some detail. There's some controversy surrounding it. But I think that I actually think when people see it, they might like it.
And this is the Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And I think for our demographic, we have to not overlook, what is it, Calling All Midwives? Is that the title
of it? Call the Midwife.
Call the Midwife.
Calling All Midwives.
Extra, extra.
It is a limited-run British drama about midwives, and it's sort of fact-based, as I understand it, but there's already a second season in the UK. So
they love it in the UK. Yep. It's the thing that PBS is hoping will be their next Downton Abbey, sort of, but there has certainly been some speculation in the UK that it might not be as well-received in the US as Downton Abbey, because it's much more working class and much less, has much less of the fancy-pantsy dresses and all that stuff.
Fewer prim women in hats.
Yes. It's much more a working person show. So I'll be interested to see how that one goes. I have the screeners. I haven't watched it yet. But you should absolutely feel free to take a look at the fall schedule yourself and come find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on the blog at npr.org/PCHH and tell us all about what you think is going to do well and, of course, why you think we are all wrong. Although I have to say, we've all sort of gone the Tanya Ballard Brown route of covering our bases.
But we each have a pick.
Yes, we do each have a pick.
Just to round them up, you have chosen
Partners.
Partners. Glenn, you have chosen
Last Resort.
You have to go back and look.
Glenn chose Last Resort. Trey chose
Nashville,
and Stephen chose
Vegas with a dollar sign.
We will come back. We will come back in a couple months and see how everybody's picks are doing. Well, now that we have spent some time talking about shows that you might get to keep or shows that you might lose, we're going to move on to our second topic, which is the pop culture breakup. This was a topic that was suggested on, I believe, our Facebook page and came from one of you. So we appreciate it because when you do our job, then we don't have to do our job. So we're going to talk about pop culture breakups. Now, this topic was presented to us in terms of breakup scenes, breakup songs, maybe a little bit of what do you watch after a breakup, although that's a little bit of a different question. Glenn, you want to kick us off? Breakup stuff?
Well, first of all, let's start with the entire discography of a band called The Magnetic Fields.
Mm-hmm.
every song they've ever done. Let's start with a song called Meaningless.
Meaningless. Who dare to say it wasn't meaningless? Shout from the rooftops and address the press. Ha ha ha, it was totally meaningless.
Or a song called Falling Out of Love with You. Which contains the lyric, every hour kills a flower, I'm falling out of love with you.
Wow.
So, yes, that's great. But the one scene that I want to talk about comes from a season 5 of The Sopranos, an episode titled Unidentified Black Males, which is sort of famous for including a big revelation about the character named Bobby Bacala. That's not the scene I'm talking about. The scene I'm talking about is this fight that takes place between Meadow Soprano and her boyfriend Finn. It happens in the middle of the night on a hot, muggy, sweaty summer night when you can just tell that the sheets are rank with their perspiration and they are having a sort of a breakup fight of the kind that at one point the director cuts over to the clock on the wall and it's 4:22 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of these fights that feeds on itself, that goes around in circles, mm-hmm. that has no... It abandons the idea that you have these two diametrically opposed people trying to establish conflicting propositions and just is about scoring points and listening to the thing that person just said so that you can turn it into something that makes you feel even more hurt. Everybody has had this fight, and it makes this scene one of the most harrowing hours of television I have watched. And then it concludes by Finn proposing to Meadow. And you're like,
I've had that fight.
It is terrible. But it was written by David Chase, Matthew Weiner, actually, and Terrence Winter, and directed by Timothy Van Patten, that scene.
That's a strong lineup of creative types.
It's just great. Indeed. I'll never watch it again.
Yeah. I'm going to go watch it right now.
Yeah. Trey Graham.
Well, as Glenn did, I'm going to start with music. And I have to go back, as with the previous segment, to the country music genre. But my favorite subgenre of country music breakup songs is not the short She Tore Out My Heart and Stomped That Sucker Flat mm-hmm. song, although I do have a playlist which is titled exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something to be said for the song She's Acting Single, I'm Drinking Doubles.
Nice.
Right?
Excellent.
My favorite is the Pissed Off Country Girl song,
mm-hmm. sure.
of which I think the non plus ultra has got to be Martina McBride's When God-Fearing Women Get the Blues. Or possibly Martina McBride's Independence Day,
mm-hmm.
which is arguably more badass in that the protagonist lights her husband on fire.
Sure.
Her abusive husband on fire. No, wait, I've forgotten Goodbye Earl, mm-hmm. in which Thelma and Louise poison Earl with black-eyed peas and then uh-huh. put him in a trunk uh-huh. and sink him in a lake.
Uh-huh.
On the melancholy side, Trisha Yearwood's I Don't Want to Be the One, which is about being afraid to pull the ripcord on a dysfunctional relationship, is painfully perceptive in the same vein as Mary Chapin Carpenter's Quittin' Time. Alison Krauss's Ghost in This House is, for my money, one of the most piercing studies on the kind of exhausted, heavyweight on your chest depression that can come in the wake of a shattering breakup.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Tammy Wynette's Help Me Make It Through the Night, Tammy Wynette's Till I Can Make It on My Own, the original, and the Martina McBride version on the cover album Tribute to Tradition. These are my recommendations for you. I leave them there for you on the table. In terms of breakup scenes, what I have chosen is not so much a breakup scene as a breakup sequence. It is the series of scenes in the movie Dangerous Liaisons when Glenn Close orders John Malkovich to go dump Michelle Pfeiffer, and then he goes and does it, and then she basically dies of agony, of a broken heart, and he is overcome with remorse and goes and picks a fight with a young boy and allows himself to be killed in a duel.
Well...
Oh, you got a kink.
I feel better already. I'm feeling good today. I'm feeling really, really good. I'm a little bit fearful at this moment, but Stephen Thompson.
I'm going to bring us down a little bit. No, I'm going to go sort of the same way. Two music picks and then a movie. As Trey alluded to, I do think part of the breakup canon does involve nihilism. And that it's important when you're going through a breakup at some point to go through kind of a nihilistic phase. My recommendation, kind of in the a different direction from Magnetic Fields, where there's this gigantic catalog of great stuff to draw from, The Mountain Goats. Mm-hmm. And specifically a song called No Children. If you ever see a Mountain Goats concert, there's a part of it where everybody screams this song in unison. And the first line of the song is, I hope that our few remaining friends give up on trying to save us. I hope we come off with a fail-safe plot to piss off the dumb few that forgave us.
Wow.
That guy, John Darnielle, who basically is the Mountain Goats.
I think I've had that fight.
Yeah, the chorus of the song is, I hope you die, I hope we both die.
Drowning, there is no sign of land. You are coming down with me, hand in unlovable hand, and I hope you die. I hope we both die.
So that is a nihilistic song, The Mountain Goats. And I mean, so many.
We all need therapy, everyone.
So many great Mountain Goats songs. Oh. But if you're talking about breakup music, The Mountain Goats, No Children, more somber, more reflective, beautiful record. There are lots and lots of canonical breakup records, Your Blood on the Tracks, Your Forever, Forever Ago.
Rumors.
One that jumps out at me that I don't think gets talked about enough, that I've certainly recommended it at NPR Music quite a bit, from a band called Noah and the Whale. And the album is called The First Days of Spring. And it's very much in the immediate aftermath of a breakup. And it is absolutely stunningly beautiful. I love this record. I've listened to this record a million times. And it starts out very slow, and then it kind of works through the process. It hits milestones along the way, and it ends with this kind of joyous moment that always gets me. I absolutely love that record. It's called The First Days of Spring by Noah and the Whale. And then the movie pick, it's kind of obvious, but I think it ultimately sums up just a wonderful way of looking at breakups and a wonderful way of looking at relationships that fail, and that is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is basically about, ultimately about, not shoving bad memories too far into the closet. There are a lot of amazing sort of metaphors in that movie, but what you ultimately take away from it is that if you forget your history, you're doomed to repeat it. It's basically the message of that movie that it hammers home very, very clearly. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And if you look at breakups through the prism of that movie, it ultimately is much more healthy and healing in the long run than shouting, I hope you die, I hope we both die.
Yes. Possibly.
I agree.
That wasn't so bad, was it?
Possibly so. Okay, so if we're doing music first, Stephen fell down on the job and failed to mention Glenn Hansard singing a song called Leave.
Oh, yeah. God, you're
which
right.
Which to me is, I tend toward these kind of like go away already breakup songs. That one, as well as, for some reason, what popped into my head, believe it or not, is a Cyndi Lauper song from my earlier, not one of the ones now when she's cool, but you know, like.
Cyndi Lauper has always been cool.
And it's called I Don't Want to Be Your Friend.
Don't call me in the middle of the night no more. Don't expect me to be there. Don't think that it'll be the way it was before. I'm not over you
pretty much what it's about. Right. And it says, I don't want you to call me, and I don't, you know.
Sort
and,
of,
and
you, then, don't, you don't get off easy.
Exactly. And yeah. And and it's kind of similar to leave in the sense that it's kind of like, if you're going, go. And don't hang around.
Don't make yourself feel better.
Right.
Yeah.
So I very much like both of those. And then the next one that occurred to me was a song called Good Year for the Roses, which I learned as an Elvis Costello song before finding out it was, of course, an old George Jones song. Because the other greatest breakup song is Anything by George
yes.
Jones.
It's been a good year for the roses. Many blooms still linger there. The lawn could stand another mow. Funny, I don't even care.
So Good Year for the Roses, instead of being about kind of the high emotion of a breakup, it's essentially about the household disassembling process. Mm. There is a line about a lip print on a half-filled cup of coffee that you poured but didn't drink. And you have a feeling that this relationship has dissolved like right then.
Yeah.
And everything is kind of left behind. And the Good Year for the Roses has to do with sort of surveying that, you know, you've got this home. Clearly, this is a home that has lasted for a while. And these people have been together for a while because they talk about, as you turn to walk away, as the door behind you closes, the only thing you have to say is, what a good year for the roses. So it is a dissolving household as yeah. opposed to just a dissolving romance, which to me is very powerful. George Jones also did a number of these, kind of what Trey is talking about, as these kind of Stomp That Sucker Flat songs. She Thinks I Still Care yeah. is one. He Stopped Loving Her Today is one.
I was bracing for it. I recoiled before you said it.
He Stopped Loving Her Today. At any rate, so those would be my musical picks. Breakup scenes, there is only one movie breakup scene, the Alpha and the Omega. Say Anything, Breaking Up in the Car. That's it. That is the ultimate breakup scene to me because...
And that brings us to the end of Popcorn.
No, because it's so painful the way they're not in the same place. Because they get into the car. Very often in movies and television, what will happen is kind of everyone knows they're unhappy. They've been fighting, blah, blah, blah. In this situation, they're in the car. They're kind of chatting. And he's sort of saying, like, let's hang out. Like, here's what we're going to do. Here's the plan, whatever. And she's sitting there knowing that her father has essentially talked her into breaking up with him. And so she's sitting there trying to figure out what she's going to do. And then they pull over and the breakup happens kind of slowly. It happens sort of like he kind of gradually figures out what she's saying. And there's a moment where she sort of says, I think that maybe we should just not spend so much time hanging out. And he's like, okay. And then she's talking about, because I'm going away and all this stuff. And then there's this moment where he starts to sort of turn the car on again. And he turns to her and he says, what do we just decide? And basically realizes then that she's broken up with him. But it happens kind of slowly, which often is the way it actually happens, that at the beginning of the conversation, you don't even always know that's what's happening.
Right.
Until you realize, like, oh. So I love that scene. Another one, though, that I wanted to mention, in the one and only wonderful season of My So-Called Life, which is on Netflix streaming, there is, late in that first season, a sequence in which essentially because Angela doesn't want to sleep with Jordan Catalano, who she's been seeing and making out with in the boiler room, essentially because she won't have sex with him, he breaks up with her, which is I always thought was a wonderfully honest teenage kind of thing, because he's so romantic and he's also kind of awful, and which is so beautifully rendered on that show. He's exactly the kind of person you just think is perfect when you're 15 or 16, who's just a nightmare. Right. So so they break up. And it's a very touching, moving breakup scene. And then there's a wonderful scene where she, a couple of episodes later, they give it a couple of episodes. And then she has kind of a recovery moment where she's dancing around in her bedroom talking about how she woke up one day and she was over it and she was okay. And the wonderful thing about it is shortly thereafter, she learns that, of course, she kind of wasn't over it. And here's the thing. You hear breakup, and usually you think of romantic couple breakup. The worst breakup on that show, the most painful breakup on that show to watch is actually her and her best friend.
Yeah.
After the breakup with Jordan, there is a sequence of events that leads to her breaking up essentially with her best friend, Rayanne, which is played out when they are rehearsing a scene from Our Town. And it sounds so hokey, but it is one of the prettiest pieces of acting, particularly between actresses that young, that I have ever seen. And Claire Danes is, I think, about to win an Emmy for Homeland. I would be somewhat shocked if she didn't. And if you look at this, which she did when she was genuinely a teenager, you can tell. You can tell that she is monstrously gifted during just this scene of her and her best friend. So it's kind of a trick. That's my trick pick is, you know, one of my favorite, most honest and moving breakups is that friend breakup.
Once again, Linda Holmes wins the podcast with a trick.
And I will point out once again, it is on Netflix streaming. And if you have never sat down and watched those, I believe it's 17 or 18 episodes. It's just stunning, stunning, stunning television. And I recommend it highly. So that is our segment on pop culture breakups. Feel free to come and find us on any of our social media.
assuming we all live long enough.
I was going to say, assuming that you're in the mood, come and talk to us. And please don't break up with us over this. I mean, just because we're bringing you down a little bit. I think any of this stuff is sort of good and, you know, cathartic if you happen to be going through a breakup. So we'll feel good about it on that basis. Now, to turn the corner a little bit, that brings us to our final segment of the show. What's making us happy this week? Yay! Flailing Muppet arms. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
Catharsis.
Yeah.
You mentioned it.
Yeah.
You know, I've been going through a bit of a purging phase, mm-hmm. just dumping and cleaning and not dumping the way we were talking about just now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, over the summer, as I mentioned, my sister and I helped my mom clean her house, which was a process that consisted of throwing things away. Mm-hmm. And we literally threw away more than one ton mm-hmm. of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Now, I have taken that strategy home with me in my own home and have been throwing things mm-hmm. away and purging stuff out of my house. And it is amazing how good for the soul it is. And where the...
Yeah, I'm going to have you over. My place is a mess.
And where it comes into an actual sort of pop cultural recommendation is something that I did not know about until I was cleaning my mother's house. And that is that Best Buy does free electronics recycling. Now, what that means...
This podcast is brought to you.
No. You don't have to spend any money at Best Buy. You show up at Best Buy and you dump a big stack of old VCRs and printers and fax machines on their doorstep. Not on their doorstep. But you bring
machines.
Them in to the customers. I realize...
I'm a lost VCR.
I realize that I sound like I'm, you know, the political candidate marveling at the... Whoa, they've got
these
crazy cash register scanners. But you walk in and you hand them your old crap and they take it. Now, you have to understand that in my life, I've had this shelf full of dead electronics that I have not... like, at some point, mm-hmm. I'm going to have to take these to a recycling center because I don't want to just put them in the garbage.
And that is the life of any pop culture aficionado.
Right, is a shelf full of old VCRs. Well, I spent a chunk of the weekend hauling out, going to different Best Buys because they have a three-thing limit. And I'm a bastard. And it has been... It has been, I know that this is not necessarily like run out to your local Best Buy, but it has been one of the most happy making little non-football, non-things I usually like kind of experiences that I've enjoyed. And I didn't know until like a month ago that this was available, that you didn't have to go through this gigantic rigmarole to get rid of your stuff.
Finding a way to purge what's left over from your various engagements with culture is definitely a big piece of pop culture fandom, I think.
And it is. Yep. It made me very happy this week.
I bet it did. Trey Graham, what's making you happy this week?
What's making me happy this week goes a little bit like this. Dum, dum, dum. Dum, dum, dum. Anybody? Everybody?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So earlier this month, a musician in Connecticut named Colin Britt realized that the synthesized string riffs in Call Me Maybe were just crying out to have justice done to them. So he sat down and arranged what is indisputably the song of the summer for full orchestra and chorus. he and a conductor colleague who's named Ariana Bela invited something like 60 classically trained instrumentalists and singers from Yale and its environs to show up and sight read this thing. Now, if you may have heard this, but I don't know if you know that they showed up and sight read it.
That complex piece of music?
Well, dump, dump, dump.
It was rather more complex.
There's more to that song.
There is more to that. And certainly there's more to this orchestration and arrangement. I am breaking one of the basic rules of the interwebs by recommending a YouTube video that already has a substantial number of views, but I do not care. It is delightful. So the early passages of this thing have a kind of distressing dissonance that's reminiscent of that Scala and Kolochny Brothers cover of Creep that they used in the credit, the trailer for The Social Network. But then once it gets going, the orchestration is really kind of genius. I mean, there's a soulful triangle chime at several points, and later there are timpani.
Soulful triangle.
And later there are timpani.
I've often ventured into the soulful triangle.
And I have not even talked about the chorister's diction, which is all, it's hard to look like.
Yes.
Right. At you, baby. And when they finally swing into the home stretch, the sopranos take the phrase, call me maybe up two octaves, and the tenors get a descant line that might have been stolen from the Brahms German Requiem. So I want to play you a little bit of this right now.
Actually, captures it. The diction is very.
Here's my number.
But it's still ecstatic.
Yeah, what? It is. It's by the time it gets going, it is absolutely ecstatic. And go watch the video. It's so much fun because they're in this, you know, they're in this music room with their music stands and the orchestra. And their posture's all good.
Are they dressed up?
Yeah, they're in sort of performing blacks, as I recall. I've only watched it three or four times, so I can't really truly tell you. So that. And also the Brahms' German Requiem, the fourth movement especially, which I went and listened to this afternoon after Tom Heisinger made that comparison for me. I was looking for a composer who I could compare this tenor descant to, and he came up with the Brahms' German Requiem. So.
All right, so Trey is being made happy by the orchestral version of Call Me Maybe with chorus. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
Peter Bogdanovich's 1972 film, What's Up, Doc? It stars Ryan O'Neill and Barbara Streisand.
Mm-hmm. It sure
so,
does.
Yeah, newsflash, gay dude likes the Barbara Streisand film. No, no. I do not consider this a Barbara Streisand film.
Right.
Because of the title card. The very last title card that comes up right before the movie starts is, and introducing Madeleine Kahn.
You bet.
This is a quintessential. She has never been connier than she is in this film. She is fantastic.
Right?
It's a screwball comedy involving a bunch of identical plaid overnight bags that in a San Francisco hotel get mistaken for each other. I hadn't seen this in literally decades. Faustino suggested we watch it because we belong together. And and it's just as good as you remember it being, which I went into this thing with white knuckle fear because the last time I did this was for a film called It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which is 192 minutes of mugging. Uh-huh. It is unbearable. It is awful. And so I was just dreading. The pacing isn't, you know, up to today's kind of standards, and there is a rape joke that comes out of nowhere for no reason.
Okay.
For no reason.
Yeah.
But, man, it's great. And it's, you know, fruit carts and plate crest windows and everything. It's fantastic. So it's on Netflix streaming. What's Up, Doc? If you haven't seen it, see it.
Absolutely. I recommend it also.
Yep.
Okay. What is making me happy this week? The first one, I'm sorry to say, is a slight Zaxxon rule violation. Glenn and I had dinner a few nights ago, and I had some genuinely fantastic seafood. If you can find a crab cake as good as the crab
cake. I recommend shrimp.
I do recommend shrimp. I recommend popcorn shrimp. I recommend crab cake. It was amazing. And so I recommend, my recommendation would be get out in your community, read some Yelp reviews. And if you haven't found a new restaurant recently, go find one. Because every now and then you sit down and it's just the absolute most delightful experience. So that would be A. But since that is a violation of the Zaxxon rule, I will now violate the I've already talked about this rule and say one of the other things making me happy right now is reading a lot of Pauline Kael, which I know I've mentioned on the show before, but I've been back plowing through a bunch of her book, one of her big books, rereading her pieces on Bonnie and Clyde, Raging Bull, and the essay Trash Art and the Movies, which... If you've never read Trash Art in the Movies, you do not understand how my brain works at all. So highly recommended. But here's the one that's not a violation of any rule. I watched this weekend the Jason Segel and Emily Blunt movie, The 5-Year Engagement, which not everything about this movie works. It's a little long. It's a full 2 hours, which for a kind of a romantic comedy is a little long, as according to the time limits that we talked about a couple weeks ago. It's like an hour of an A-minus movie with like an hour of a C-plus movie kind of stuffed around it. So it has some drawbacks. But it features supporting performances from a whole bunch of the NBC Thursday night lineup, including Mindy Kaling, who is fine but has a sort of a small part. But also Chris Pratt from Parks and Recreation, who is absolutely one of my favorite comic actors right now. Hysterically funny, effortlessly funny in everything. He plays Andy on Parks and Rec, if you don't watch that. And Alison Brie, who is on Community and also on Mad Men, for an interesting 1-2 punch of great roles on great shows. So the two of them play a couple. And even though Alison Brie is playing British, which kind of makes no sense to me, like there are plenty of nice, pretty British actresses. I don't know why you would do that. But I'm glad they did, because she's very funny. He's very funny. They have great chemistry. And it's an opportunity to watch two people who I think are both great play together, which I don't often get to see.
Awesome.
So I would say that movie specifically for those two performances. It is a very charming movie on the whole, but if a little long and a couple other things. But for those two performances, absolutely what is making me happy this week.
Beautiful.
Awesome. Hey, absolutely. Can I have a bonus round?
Yes. No.
Yes. Inspired by Glenn Weldon, I would like you to Google the words Madeleine Kahn, Candide.
Okay.
And then when you're done watching that, which is awesome, she's singing Glitter and Be Gay from Candide, just Google Madeleine Kahn singing, and you will discover a side of Madeleine Kahn that you do not know, perhaps, unless you were curious enough about her Aw Sweet Mystery of Life to delve into the subject earlier.
If I haven't come across as gay enough with the Barbra Streisand recommendation, her version of Not Getting Married Today from...
Oh, my God, yes. From Company.
Company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On YouTube.
Oh, yes.
She does a very difficult patter song effortlessly.
How wonderful.
She is like a bonus person we're pulling for.
Yes. Oh, she is. Oh, she's, yes. She's a bonus everything. We love her. She is...
Rest in peace, Madeleine Kahn.
Indeed. She was...
Yeah, we can't really pull for her.
Clue. Oh, my God.
Flames.
All right.
Anyway, we have to stop, or we'll talk about Madeleine Kahn all day, which I'm sure you could as much as we could.
That's next week's episode.
Exactly.
Madeleine Kahn Appreciation Hour.
But that does bring us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, STEPHEN. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon, WELDON. You can follow our producer, Jess Gittner, at Jess Gittner, GITNER. You can follow our esteemed producer, emeritus, and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, still provides our In and Out music, which you are still tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to you guys for being here back in the studio.
Oh, yay.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.